Blog Talk Radio.
Shy one horse.
You brought too many.
Thank you.
March 9th. Happy birthday to my brother, Keith J. Huntley. Much love, bro.
And
welcome to another edition of Soul Tree Radio in the Vault. A special one because on this day, 10 years ago, we came out with the first edition of The Tree. I'm your host, Michael Lewis, singer, DJ Honeycomb from Total Music Concepts, LTD. And we are proud to serve you again as hosts. Soul Tree Radio Raw, proudly sponsored by BASNNewsroom.com and the Assassins of the Black Athlete Sports Network. Doing damage to the who, what, when, where, why, and sometimes how. We do it here and we do it now. Go to www.BASNNewsroom.com forward phrase for more information, articles, and other good shit. Now, as we have done 10 years and almost 1,600 shows, nobody does it alone. I have plenty of people to thank for it. As a matter of fact, one young man who stood alone sometimes in a tireless crusade to make sure their Native brothers and sisters were represented properly. He hated the nickname, as I did, of Washington's football team, and he decided to do something about it. And with the help of others, that name is no longer what it is. It's called the Commanders. They call themselves the Commanders. I don't know what the fuck they think they're commanding, but, you know, hey. It was, at least it wasn't the other name. So I have to give shout out to my brother Gary Norris Gray for his consistency and tenaciousness in approaching this. In 10 years plus now, we've been able to do a little bit of damage, and my colleagues, Tony McLean, Patrick Farrar, Fred Widdett, Reggie, Radio Reggie, I was going to say, help me, Reggie, I changed my mind. Celeste Walden Kelly, Wanda Harper, Bobby Booker, Pat Freeman, the Mighty Oba, and others. We have helped spread the message. And why? I have to say I was doing volunteer work at Global Vision at one time. And then they had the media bet against South Africa. Did a magazine program called South Africa Now. And the young lady that was running it was making sure I understood just how important it was to have a voice and make sure that voice controlled if they were passing forth information that would benefit the people. I never forgot that. And that allowed me to carry on later on as Roman Rogers would eventually branch out into BASN radio and give me my first shot in the States on air. I have time up in Canada. A shout out to my Canadian colleagues, especially David Love Jones, Brother Don Chow, Luis Machuca, and others, Jonah Howard, who were also instrumental in me following through on this adventure. And first of all, 10 years is a lot of work, and 10 years is a lot to ask for colleagues, ask from, and I have done just that, and they have provided and come through big time. So, you all know I love you, Alpha. I want to tell you how much I love you now. My line mates are on air now, Tony and Gary. And good evening.
Good evening, sir.
For a 10-year-old, you're awful loud.
Well, I guess we started out that way in no sense not doing anything but continuing on. So, to start up, we have to take dumb fucks for 1,000, please. And we don't need the Daily Double because this one kind of takes care of itself. Now, I'm not going to jump on this young man yet because there's one other person to jump for. And this young lady had the, as my brother says, the mitigating gall to try to skirt the rules living somewhere else. And yes, I'm talking about Brittany Griner. Now, we first heard about Griner when we were doing an episode of one of our shows, and Raymond Lewis, who was the last hardship case to come out and play in the NBA, was rocking the world. And his wife was nice enough to come on our show, and she told us about Brittany. Brittany was only 16 at the time. And she said, "This one girl down in Texas was rocking it." And obviously, she was talking about Brittany, but what we didn't know was that Brittany would grow up to be this young starlet who secured a career for herself playing professional basketball. Now, we know in the States, they ain't paying that well. So for those who could really do it, you got to go abroad to make some extra jack. No problem there. But there's one thing I can tell you as someone having lived somewhere else, when you live in Rome, Russia, wherever, you better do as they do. Because if you don't, getting put in jail is no fucking joke. I'm here to tell you. And right now, as we speak, Brittany Griner is in serious trouble. They can try to soft pedal it all they want, but you break somebody's laws somewhere else, they can do what they want. And I also want to include to this my brother Reggie, because Reggie and everyone on our thread was the first one to emphasize, and I repeat, emphasize how important local politics affect our overall demeanor in terms of what people want and what they can expect to get. He talked always incessantly about how you got to be there on the ground, the local politicians, the mayors, the congresspeople, all those folks, whatever they call them, aldermen outside, that they have weight. And it's important to get their ear to keep your voice on point. And Reggie, now to order, I just want to say again, thank you for providing us with great insight and some humor, because, you know, you can always get pissed about this, but it's nice to be smiling every now and then. Can y'all hear me okay?
Yes,
sir.
Yeah, a little muffled, but we can hear you.
There we go.
Okay.
So, we see Brittany. 3 weeks in the joint, at least. And we also see that she was found with hashish on her. Now, vaping as it is per se is not illegal. You know, people in the UK vape big time. But vaping a narcotic, a potential narcotic, that's a whole other story. And according to the laws, they have tripped up now. That's 5 years in the joint if she was caught with exactly what she was caught with. Fellas, I mean, how many times do you spell stupid? You know, you just can't get away with this shit being from the U.S.
And the other factor that's going on, that's working here as well, as we all are familiar with in regards to Russia's politics, they're very anti, you know, LGBT,
yeah.
You know, the whole thing. And
mm-hmm.
they don't think that that's not a factor. And look, the whole you know, filthy American sort of thing is being played
mm-hmm.
out. But they're also but between that and the whole thing with the LGBT community and
mm-hmm.
the fact that she's she's black and a prominent athlete. You know, this is, you know, and they're in the middle of, and they know all the nice things that are being said about them here in the United
mm-hmm.
States right now.
That's exactly right.
I mean,
that's Russian for
a if you talk
mm-hmm.
about being, at the wrong place at the wrong time, doing the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm. Now, some of us saw Midnight Express and that movie came out, and it seemed like it was a nightmare come to life. What that young man went through. But make no bones about it. I've never been in a situation where the public side found any need to put me in a joint. But don't think they won't. As a matter of fact, I was just starting to grow my dreads out from Germany at that time. and they would always look at you a little bit harder. You know?
Okay.
And you don't need no reason to cause more trouble. So you just, if you want to be left the fuck alone, then don't do nothing to get you in a situation like that. Brittany Griner allowed her celebrity to get the best of her. Yes, she played over there, but she played 7 years. 7 years would be more than enough time for the light to come on.
Yep.
And now we got to wonder what she's doing and where she is and if she's okay. Because
yep.
they're really not going to tell anything. She broke their law, not hers. And that means trouble either way you look at it.
Michael, when you go overseas for 7 years in a row, you know what the rules are.
That's right, you do.
Oh, what you getting? The excuse of I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
That's not fine. Because you were there 7 years.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, you can't see that.
Ignorance of the law cannot be used here.
That's right. No, that's true. And I have to say, in addition to this issue, this is bordering on something that we've covered over the 10 years that we've been at this, you know, making sure information properly gets out to people. You know, we always say that once you get this stuff, it's up to you. You'll do with it what you want. But he can't do anything about stupid. And for Brittany Griner to believe that a celebrity would protect her somewhere else is about as stupid as you can get. Although, we have somebody else who has taken stupid to another degree. I submit to the court one Calvin Ridley. Yes, Ridley played wide receiver for the Atlanta Falcons.
Don't get involved.
He had some good numbers, and it looked as he was coming at the end of his rookie contract, that he could expect a reasonably good payday as a free agent. Now, my brother Gary knows that we have developed our own lexicon during this time, and one of his favorite words is assholery.
Yes.
Assholery is one way to state this. However, there's a crime higher than assholery, and that is dumb fuckery. And right now,
if all you English majors, these are both pronouns, so they're there. I'm sorry, action verbs.
Exactly.
I'm sorry. Let me get that right.
Yes. So we make
proceed. Please proceed.
But yes, and because Mr. Ridley took it upon himself to exercise his right to be stupid, he will not play for the entire 2022 season.
Michael.
Why? Okay, okay.
Michael, this thing bothers me in more ways than one.
How so?
Bothers me because, number one, when you go to rookie camp, there is a 2-week seminar at rookie camp.
Orientation, yes. Mm-hmm.
They tell you A, B, C, D, what to do.
That's right, LeBron.
What
to do.
Not to do at rookie camp.
Mm-hmm.
So this bothered me because you knew, you know what you're doing? I give you the benefit of the doubt. But when you know you're doing it wrong,
yep.
You got a problem.
Well, you know what? Hold on.
Here's my question, Mike. It's okay for them to have athletes advertise fantasy football. It's okay for the athletes to play fantasy football, which is gambling. They don't come down on that. But yet, they got FanDuel and the NFL is making billions of dollars off of this, not including this and passing it. Oh, let me finish, Gary. Hold up. Gary, let me finish. I'm saying is that it's amazing to me that they can play fantasy football and that's gambling and not get charged. You can't have it both ways. No, you can't have it both ways.
Bingo.
I mean, it's a fact. You can play fantasy football, but that's
again. You can't do that.
Gary, I understand the spirit in which you're talking, but in this case, Reggie is right. You know, the NFL
are you listening
cannot
what I'm saying,
take
Gary?
It on both sides of his neck. We got the NFL. Every broadcast that you see is at least in a 3-plus-hour broadcast. There's at least 15 to 20 30-second spots. DraftKings or something.
I tell you what, if he got a decent lawyer, they can beat this. Because here's my question to you, Gary. If you can do fantasy football, which is a form of gambling, then how in the ham sandwich can they sit up there and hold this guy accountable when they are not only making money off of it, they're doing an advertisement for fantasy football, and they also give you the damn stats? You can't have it both ways, man.
Come on. And let's face it, and also, let's be real here, both FanDuel and DraftKings are basically sponsors of national football, of the National Football League.
Thank you.
There's no way around that.
Yeah, they even have their presence at racing tracks.
So it's hypocritical.
So
and a lot of these tax dollars from these states are going into these commercials and everything. Why? Because the owners get a damn tax break.
And Mike,
yep.
I find it very ironic that the law-abiding, that the high moral law-abiding citizens of Florida were the ones that basically marked them out. For those who didn't know, apparently he did this online or on his phone, and that's how they were able to trace him. But isn't it funny, considering all the crazy mess that's going on in the Sunshine State, that all of a sudden they got all Dirty Harry on Calvin Ridley.
Thank you. Ain't no sunshine when he's caught. That's exactly right.
Mike, this is my point here. The National Football League is two-faced. What I mean is this. The National Football League was the integrity of the game. How can you have integrity of the game when you have FanDuel and DraftKings do what they're doing? It can't work both ways.
That's right. You got DraftKings.
Actually, at this point, they have about 45 different faces of Eve at this point in time right now.
Yeah, exactly. Or Sybil, whatever her name is. That bitch is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
But here's what I don't understand. Calvin Ridley made the ultimate gamble. He bet on himself that he would make it to the NFL. So, against the odds, against the fact that there's only a finite number of jobs available, he makes it, and gets to his rookie contract in good amounts, setting himself for what would have been a potential payday that would have made him a millionaire, point blank, without having to make a bet or anything like that. As a matter of fact, I know that the Eagles were considering him as one of their potential free agents because one of their receivers ain't shit and he's got to go. But having said that, Ridley could have wrote his own ticket and would have been happier than a clam. He wouldn't have had to do anything. He wouldn't have had to make one bet because he already won. He already won. The game was over. He had the W. But yet, he fucked up. And you got to call it like it is. We don't deviate from stuff like that here. So if it pleases the court, I have to pass this information on that Ridley will forfeit his season. He will forfeit whatever salary comes with that. So he went from potential at least $10 million salary to a $1.5 million better than Max, because he will not get that kind of money again. He will be a liability. Now, the A's are gambled his way out of the league. Back in the 60s, Paul Horne and Art Carey played against football, and they got jacked. And they would have been in deep shit if they weren't connected with Vince Lombardi. Lombardi pretty much was to suck somebody's cock for Green Bay to keep Paul Horne on the suspended list until that came off. And, of course, Horne and Art Carey are now in the Hall of Fame. We have Commissioner Roger Goodell. And remember, he works for the owners, sitting there and telling everybody that, you know, we have gambling problems. No, you don't have a fucking gambling problem. You have an ethics problem, because you don't even believe what you're saying. And because it's lying and goes along with this malice, this is a step above assholing, Gary. And we have to call this exactly what it is.
Yeah.
If they please the motherfucking court, it's a shame we have to do this on our 10th anniversary, but Calvin Ridley blew it, and he has nobody to blame but himself. He gambled when he didn't have to because he had already won. And if they're too stupid to understand that, then the charge is first-degree felony dumb fuckery, which mandates a life sentence. So to the court, I say Calvin Ridley is guilty of dumb fuckery in the first degree.
Pretty much. Like, think about it. I mean, the actual bet itself was, what, about $1,100?
Yeah.
He got $1.5 million.
$15 million.
Wow.
That's
wow. It. Yeah. It's my head hurts now.
Well, in the final run to this, remember, Brian Flores and Hugh Jackson were given $100,000 per game for this. They were offered that. We'll say offered. They were offered at least $100,000 a game to throw the game, regardless of who they played against. And if we just follow the premise of you tell your friends and they tell two friends and so on and so on and so on, like the old commercial, you got a lot of people putting a lot of money on these passes, and they go to the pay window. Now, in the real world, you would call that insider trading. But that doesn't happen in National Football League because they're morally and ethically against it.
What was very interesting was that they made it a point to say that now, if you've been following him this year, you know, he was on a leave of absence because of depression, or mental health. But see, here's the thing. They made it a point to say that, you know, it didn't have, you know, he didn't like leak the game plan or anything to that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole thing was, quote, you know, that, you know, apparently it was like a 5-game parlay. And the Falcons were a part, you know, he bet on the Falcons in a part of it. They said, you know, there was no, like, in a sense, there was no quote unquote insider trading. It was, you know, I mean, he basically was Joe Blow,
okay.
You know, except for the fact that chick that he gets from Arthur Blank every month, and it ain't from Home Depot. Let's put it that way.
No joke. Well, you know what? If he survives, because, again, this means he can't play the whole season. I don't know what's in his contract that will mean moral turpitude or whatever, and he loses cash because of it or has to forfeit bonus because of it. It remains unfettered that in a league with almost 17 other players in it, you got at least one that's got the itch. And that itch was scratched, and now it's scratching his ass back because he can't make no money. No matter what they do, he will be considered poison. As I speak on this, we are also adding to Thread, a brother who's been involved with us during this time. He was very instrumental to us in Sandusky's deviousness and desperately doing it at Penn State. We'll put out on Front Street. Are you bad, brother? Mixed with metaphysics, with practical knowledge, puts it out here, edification, where we can all understand it. Since Eric Sadaway, Eric, we thank you for all this time that you put in together and keeping it on.
Yeah, likewise, man. You know, don't see it as anything other than, you know, like, you know, building with the brothers. How's everybody doing this evening?
All right.
Good.
So we were talking about, I heard a little bit on the Brian, so you're talking about like Ridley?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Moneybags Ridley.
Moneybags Ridley. One of many, huh? One of many. I know we've had snippets of dialogue. I mean, there's a lot of broad subjects covered here over the course of time, but when this moved into the regular domain, come on, you know, like this was not going to happen or is currently happening and has been happening, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, always going to be a fall guy, right? It's always going to be a fall guy. And this is, you know, the sanctity of sports. Can anyone disavow the sanctity of sports, right? I mean, we know better. Right, about fair competition, you know, this, that, and the other. I mean, we've seen some that situations over and over again where the game is working. I mean, for crying out loud, you've got NFL coaches, regardless of their stance, saying that their own leadership wants to break them off money for losing games.
Mm-hmm.
That's serious.
Yep.
You know, hey, man.
You talk about the integrity of the game. You lose the game on purpose, but yet you want to go after his brother.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
If you listen, if the owner, if your employer is telling you, don't be that competitive, and if you're not that competitive, here's what's in it for you, and to think that owner's not, you know, putting money up.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yep.
You know, and that's one of the things that in this venue is kind of really the ultimate contradiction, right? You know, like sports is just a living contradiction. Like if you coach, you say to yourself, hey, no way they should be able to run that offense, right? And then at the same token of time, it's like no way they should do this. But then the contradiction is you should be effective both ways. So it's always a contradictory environment anyway. Block or charge, right? So it's even down to the rules. So when it comes to high stakes, I mean, to me, the seriousness, I mean, from the competitive nature of an owner, the players, we all know they're fodder. They can be replaced at any time. They don't matter. You know, I mean, they get traded, moved around once their usability is up. We've seen that with Wilson, right? Mm-hmm. You know, with Denver.
Right.
You know, it's not Pete Carroll's fault. It's Russell Wilson's fault. That's what that says. Mm-hmm. It has nothing to do with Pete. It has nothing to do with Russell. It's Pete Carroll. You know, nothing to do with Pete Carroll. Or Russell's the indicator.
And it's
historical, right? You know, Montana didn't finish out with the Niners. Rice didn't finish out with the. We can go on and on and on.
Mm-hmm.
Right, how, you know, a branded player associated with a city did not finish out because they were fodder. You know, I mean, LeBron's on his fourth team.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, Jordan did not, you know, he does that last dance thing. You know, your last dance was in Washington. when you decided to give up your general manager role to become a buck on the floor. And then after they maxed you out, marketed you to an ON, sold tickets, and you went back for your GM job, they said, nah, we're going to go a different way.
Yes, exactly.
Right? Right, we're going to go a different way. So historically, man, what's new about any of this ish? And the funny part is, it's like, you know, people in your inner circles or those who know you, they're like, well, how can you watch sports knowing you know all the Dick, Spike likes to say, the Dick Dastardly and Muttley ish?
Yeah.
Right? You know, because you know that backroom thing, man, is always in play somehow, some way. And sometimes, you know, can you really trust a teammate? You know, I remember one time I can recall, you know, in a sporting environment, you know, some teammates telling me that, you know, prior to a game, they like to smoke like half a joint or some shit, right? I felt so ticked off that, you know, that they were literally, you know, effing, you know, under the influence of something in the spirit of competition. Here, with all my purity of sports, you know, here's my, they're telling me, hey, man, our ritual was doing this shit. I'm like, MF, is that how you dropped the rock when you was wide open?
Exactly.
You know,
that's another thing to consider.
Yes. And, I mean, and you look at, I remember, you know, college visits in the 80s. This is when, you know, the cocaine in the NBA was, you know, as common as the NBA logo on the uniforms or something. Right?
Yeah.
It was just every fucking way, man. Damn. Yeah. I mean, yo, dog. I mean, like, whoa, right? You know, and I remember going on this visit, you know, university, and, man, it was just like, it was like wide open season. You know, what was being moved around, you know, and then they wonder, so when Lynn Bias, you know, unfortunately had, you know, the super public demise.
Yes.
It was not like that was news to people who knew what was going on out in that environment.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Just
it didn't reverberate where it should have. Yes, I feel you on that.
Exactly
to the bone. You know, as I say this, I want to include another member of the thread who taught me how to look at things differently. I always consider myself a thinker in terms of thinking things all the way through. But this young man comes in, throws a little bit of flavor in there, and makes me see it from the other side. And one thing we've always prided ourselves on here is that we're going to push things from many sides and come up with viable dialogue that would make it seem, okay, hey, man, there's another way to look at this. Now, he's not country cousin. He's down there in North Kakalaki. And he don't like no Yankees. But I like him one way or another. That's my man, the professor, Fred Whitty. Professor, thank you for all that you've done. And thank you for any contribution that you put in the future. Dave.
Okay, what am I being buttered up for?
I mean, it's just a big flaky biscuit, man. You know, that's all.
I came in while you all were discussing this, you know, all the ramifications of all the I see, but I don't believe what I see. And this is what we mean. You know, we like to point back to one former president and how he could look at something and not see what's there, but then he could see something else there that wasn't there.
Mm-hmm.
And he created, and within the confines of his head, he could reorder the world and everything around him. You know, and to a degree, we all do that to some degree. Don't get me wrong, but not to the degree that he sees it. And we don't have that platform to comment on it the way that he did, and still does to some degree.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is simply this: this whole thing about the NBA and the NFL, you know. Way back when the NFL used to give guys shots on the, you know, and the situation that everybody will remember was, I want to say it was North Dallas 40 or whatever, where they shot this guy's knee up, and he got hit, and it blew it to all the kidneys, and all that kind of stuff. You know, as I like to say in my country voice, it ain't nothing new, because we've been seeing this for years and years and years.
Same old.
You go back to a situation down, I want to say in Mississippi, where this guy was one of the local organizers for the voting rights and getting people getting people registered to vote and all this kind of stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
He gets shot in the face with buckshot. Do you know what his what they said his cause of death was? Lead poisoning.
Oh my God. Uh-huh.
Another gentleman. They torched his house, and he suffered severe burns, trying to cover his wife and family so they could get away. And they said, they try to play it like it was just a regular house fire. And, you know how to put wood in the stove.
But, Professor, I got a question for you, Professor. We know the tendency, what goes on in these municipalities, because Mike and Irene are talking about local elections and how important it is to be involved. Case in point, Washington football team, it might as well be known as the Maryland football team, because once again, just like the Rams, they're going to cut a sweetheart deal to move them to Prince George County, which is one of the richest areas up there in Maryland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Professor and the panel, I'm going to throw this out there, if I may, quick 2 minutes, if I may. Tax dollars, once again, the revenue is coming on the backs when we know that our HBCUs are draining. And by the way, the former South Carolina coach, basketball coach, Mary Gibbons, is suing the school for unfunding basketball. They did not act in good faith. So that's another problem we're going to have.
Mm-hmm.
My issue is this, that when you have the gambling, and like I was telling Gary earlier, when the NFL players can do FanDuel, they can do all these illegal activities, when it comes to fantasy football, everything's fine. But yet when the Falcon receiver does it for $1,500, all of a sudden we got to bring the hammer down. And, it gets better than that. Just like the baseball strike. First thing is the villain is the baseball player. Oh, these guys are making these crazy salaries, $40 million, $250 million, while the fucking owners are making billions of dollars. As the one white man told Shaq, hold on, let me finish, guys. The one white man told Shaq, I'm wealthy, you're rich. It's a big difference. I can pay you $240 million and still make that probably within a day, if not more. And I'm still making money.
Mm-hmm.
So, gentlemen,
because
as Mike said, but my issue is this, that every time when it's a problem, they always want to put the players' faces up there, but the owners are the ones who are really screwing everybody. And I'm talking about the states and municipalities. You look at the Rams. They already had a sweetheart deal in place 3 years before they moved. And that's why they told St. Louis, kiss our ass. We ain't coming back. You know, we got a $5 billion playpen, and we keeping it moving. But nobody talks anything about the owners.
Reggie's right, but in the Raiders situation, they had come and gone before. So I mean, you know, horses say they, you know, how long they're gonna stay in Vegas? Because remember, the Raider logo only says Raider. It does not say what city.
It doesn't say what
just
city.
Like, that's right. You didn't say where, and you know, he probably won't ever end up on the East Coast. By the same, who knows?
Yep.
They can always move to the Southwest.
They'll max out on Las Vegas because you know that's where the league wants them. But when you think back to Reggie's point, that's what the league wants. But, you know, back to Reggie's point in terms of the municipality. See, the understated part to that as well is that Inglewood is a long time, you know, last year's black enclave in Los Angeles County. And the stadium being built, many people got rerouted out of their longtime residents of Inglewood because of the property values just going up astronomically based on the stadium built out and the gentrification. So it caused a real mass location. The same thing happened in Chavez Ravine when O'Malley took the Dodgers to Los Angeles. I mean, there's video out there where they are – the local inhabitants, the police are beating them, but they were protesting that stadium wow. being built. A lot of those were Shino Nathaniels or people from Mexico that was down there, and they were getting rammed out of there. There's video of police, you know, billy clubbing women who were just protesting mm-hmm. that stadium being built.
Yep.
That stadium was built in blood. Los Angeles, Inglewood, you know, I mean, the last time the Forum was there, that's a black enclave in Southern California. Chavez Ravine got gutted. You know, I mean, there was literally mayhem. It was blood on their hands to build that stadium. It wasn't just built, you know, in an open land per se. And so like Professor says, this is an old song. I mean, come on. I mean, Pete Rose bet on his own team in the 70s, whatever the fuck that time frame was. Excuse my language. But he was the manager of the team just cutting deals off the bullpen telephone or wherever else he was going in the dugout. Right? I mean, this thing has been an ongoing process, let alone the fight game. We don't even need to get into boxing. But the whole thing being is, none of this is new. So the brothers out there, you know, making the decisions, FanDuel or playing, you know, small fries, and these networks, it's just an example to serve for those who are playing bigger. The NBA right. had huge issues with gambling amongst players. I mean, mm-hmm. Charles Oakley, you know, before a game, literally, you know, threw a ball at Tyrone Hill when he used to play. I don't know which team he was. I think he may have been Cleveland at the time. Started to fight because he lost a bet on a game that they had between teams. Mark Jackson got pulled back for betting a little bit on something. Yep. Not saying he was doing anything illegal, but amongst other players. They were betting, mm-hmm. You know, which means that, and they were getting sued all the time, but that doesn't mean they were crossing over. Charles Barkley, Antoine Walker, some other NBA players, were getting sued by casinos for back debt. Now,
yeah, they talked about that often. Walker lost about $31 million behind that bullshit.
You know what I'm saying? And then Jamal Crawford, when he was playing, he looked up to Jordan so high. You know, he thought like, "Yo, I'm going to follow everything he did." And he started to play, gamble, and he started losing loot because he just thought that, hey, that was the thing to do. Tiger Woods was warned, "Don't mess with Jordan. Stay away. Take you mm-hmm. down." You know, and he was out there heavy in the stakes in Vegas, high-stake games, playing the Wells games, and more times than not, they were not winners. This is nothing new for those who know.
Well, see, what's bothersome to me is they're going to try to basically paint him out to be McConaughey as a lone
yes.
wolf. And
exactly.
if you really believe that Calvin Ridley is a nation unto himself.
He's the only one.
Oh, please. Goodness
yeah,
gracious.
Know
you know.
We had an NBA ref, Donahue, right? Donahue literally went out. And I mean, Donahue did a bid, man.
Gentlemen, you know, the best way to look at this is, okay, Look at what's been prominent in the news the last few years. Okay, we pretty well covered the domain now I've always said you don't cheat using players, you cheat using referees. Too many things that the referees do are subjective, and because of that, I missed the call. Oops, my bad.
True. Mm-hmm.
Okay, fast forward. We have, what was it called? The election, quote, the election is rigged. We have mm-hmm. all kinds of things going on to the polls. And I say the polls, having worked at the polls for the last well, now off and on for 30 plus years. There are too many moving parts, in which also means there's too many hands out to get greased to, for some of this stuff to go on at the quote unquote local level or the you know, the fan level. Okay, yeah, you can catch a bunch of fans, you know, betting on games. You can catch people in the family betting on games, but that's more potatoes. Okay. How is it that, who did I watch? I watched Sunday. In between my nets. Oh, Michigan and Ohio State. How did one team blow a lead that fast? Wasn't that amazing about what was being done offensively? They weren't playing. I mean, the guy drives to the basket and he's like Matador defense.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Three-pointers, okay, they hit a few of them. But the real deal was, as you look at basketball, you can't have one referee doing the do. They all got to be doing it.
Right.
They all three.
Mark Cuban points that out all the time. I mean, he's got statistics of every referee call known to man. And when they lost to Miami Heat, when Dallas lost to the Miami Heat in, after going up 2-0, Cuban ran the midcourt where Stern was sitting. She rose up and just started letting go expletives and talking about how rigged it is. And this was not a person making an empty declaration without data. This is not a person not understanding. They know what referees are. I mean, there's certain referees that ref certain games that that certain teams have a losing percentage against. Hate seeing them show up. Yeah. They're winning. So all this was documented and studied. So none of this is remote. So this purity, people are watching things, you know, just – can have their own assessment of what they're watching, you know, which is fine. You know, that's how it's sold. But from the standpoint of this being fair competition and legitimate competition and best team wins, okay, we'll just leave it there.
Absolutely.
That one, you know, even to the Olympics and all those kind of things, you know, go back to 1972 and when the babies lost to the Russian army. Okay? It took a little bit of time for them to find a way to spin it in such a way that, okay, we want to put real pros out there. Because think about it. At that time, you had a few guys that had been under the auspices of Coach Mack, and he had been teaching them how to play the game of basketball because they wouldn't let him teach here. So he went over to Europe. He taught the Russian army. He taught remember back then all those little countries that you're hearing about now when it comes to the war over there and the shooting and all that kind of stuff, those countries were part of the quote Soviet Union. He taught the Soviet Union how to play. So you had Yugoslavia, you had Poland, you had Russia, you had East Germany. All those areas were learning to play under him. Well, what happened? It turned on them because you had boys playing men. I'm Lieutenant Shevetsky, and I'm a lieutenant in the Russian Air Force. What's your job? I play basketball. When they had the Russian USA track meet here in Durham back in 72 or 3, it was, I mean, let me not sound too racist or sexist with this, but they had some Russian women in the throwing area. I ain't so sure they were. They say they were women, so hey, you go with what they say. brothers, right? They were so steroid down. They had medication that enhanced their.
So you said they were Mrs. Ivan Drago.
And they were public with it, this young lady would come over and pick up a 16 pound shot and throw it like one of us.
I throw a ball.
Was she wearing a jock strap?
I'll let you check and see because I wasn't about.
No, sir.
That's a game. That's a game of peekaboo that I want no part of.
I know that's right. But you know, gentlemen,
that might be bigger than
that. The thing I find most alarming about this is that Calvin Ridley and Brittany Griner, they were lacking what my mom would call common sense. They put themselves in situations that jeopardize not just their safety, but their sense of what was going on. They made themselves vulnerable through their own stupidity. And as we get back to Ridley, it's like, how, as Reggie would say, how in a ham sandwich can you sit there and bet, knowing that from February in the Super Bowl to this month and the tournament, that $20 billion is going to exchange hands? $20 billion! It's going to hit the floor, and your dumb ass.
And the house is going to win $19.5 billion of that.
There you go.
They're going to win 19.5 because the thing is, this is not intelligence play. I mean, when people throw out the numbers, you know, it sounds good.
Yeah.
You know, hey, $20 billion, $30 billion. All right, what's the minutia of the detail?
Yeah.
What's the breakdown? You know, so the breakdown is the house is winning. And these people are going to the poorhouse. They're going to Alcoholics Anonymous. They're destroying their families. They're destroying their careers. It's irresponsible for anyone to come into a venue and just keep pushing the dollar thing when they really don't even know what money is, to be real. You know what I'm saying? Like a form of exchange. But how are you benefiting, capitalizing by, you know, kind of constantly giving Forbes report or what the overall dollar and over and under is when it all is rendered unto Caesar. Period.
Thank you.
It's rendered unto Caesar. That's who's getting the pay. So when Reggie makes the comment, and rightfully so, about owners, you know, creme de la creme, they're the ones who really make the money. I was like, duh. Because they can pay those salaries, which is nothing but a money dump, and it's all part of the cost of doing business. So they don't even see it as salary. You know, they see it as the cost of doing business on what their net is because they have a cap in the NBA, right? And they have these contracts that they can give, and they have this thing called max deal. Well, what's a max deal? A max deal has a ceiling. It's not unlimited, but an owner doesn't have a max deal.
Did not exceed the salary cap to pay for his Super Bowl.
They pay for it. So what they do for that, they'll pay a luxury tax. So they supersede the league rules. It's called a luxury tax. Yeah, I'll eat the tax. You know, and so when they have these breakdowns about the merch and breaking down the sales, what's the trickle-down effect to the players? So we've talked about this ad nauseum, or may have mentioned, okay, there's a Jordan brand. He doesn't own it. Nike owns it. He just uses his name.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't own the fucking brand. You know, and so it's the same thing as a lot of urban attire, right? You know, there was things out there called Sean John. He was not the owner. Buffy Combs, Sean Combs is not the owner of that. FUBU, too. You know what I'm saying? And so these things that are out there, this thing is so rigged and ganked. And see, that's what people, when they come into these kind of environments and they're participant to the illusions, where do you really stand in this thing? Because if you promote the aspect – a free competition and everything's on the up and up, and then we keep kind of finding out this is rigged, that's rigged. You got Pete Rose, Charlie Hustle, more hits than anyone betting on his own team, betting on other teams. You got the so-called, quote-unquote, greatest players of all time getting caught up in, gambling scandals and betting scandals and got to leave and do different things like that. You got professional fighters whose career, Ali's career was built on the Liston fights. They were both rigged. The first fight, he beat Liston's ass. Second fight was 1,000% rigged. Mm-hmm. And so when you start, and then Foreman talks about what happened in Zaire with the ropes being too loose and backing the fight up, and he felt like something got in his drink, and he backed up because he said, this shit ain't winning. Tyson would get hypnotized before his fight. Literally got hypnotized. So when you start getting into the raw data of this stuff that takes place, there's a lot of stench, man. And there has to be like a common ground reality of knowing this, that when we see these things happening, like really, it's like, okay, what's new? Like Professor said, really, is that really what happened? What's new?
And the X factor is who has access to this information? Because the owners already know.
They watch these players like nobody's business, man.
Yes. The owners already know what's going down.
They know your picadillos, right? They know your weakness.
If they know you're blatant enough to bet on a team and somehow the owner tells us Cleveland's going to lose, I guarantee it because I paid the coach $100,000. Do you not think some of us are going to show some cash out to bet that?
That is so blatant, yeah.
Yeah.
And then you speak on it 3 years later, right? Then you speak on it. Oh, he's right. I remember the guy kicked. I mean, yo, where were you when this shit went down? I mean, we talked about the coach John B. McLendon example in this case where he told Steinberg, listen, there's two places you can't be. You can't be in the bench. You can't be in my locker room. And the moment Steinbrenner kept butting it, he bounced. I said, yo, dude, I can't do this, man. This is compromising my integrity. Find someone else to do it. I'll be a little first black GM thing. But I can't coach under these auspices. And he gave it over to Sherman. Not because he left. He didn't get clipped. He said, I can't operate in this premise because this dude is too hot-headed. He's too egotistical. He was young. He was living off his daddy's money. At that point, he didn't have the green light because his father was still alive, Steinbrenner and Center. So he had to pause a little bit, but Coach McLendon had enough integrity to say that you're not going to manipulate my mentality and how I draw my X's and O's. So when we hear things like Hugh say the owner did that and you didn't quit, or when the brother from Miami was offered this and you didn't quit, that's the moment your resignation is out.
Yes.
I can't do this, man. You're and you hang in there. That means you cut the deal. Anyway, we know you cut the deal. Let's take it to the level of the street. Guy got caught up with some dudes and got a long case, right? This is going to get like 5 years. We see him back on the street in 45 days.
Yep.
Do you trust this cat? He cut a deal, man. Basic. Where's the common sense of these things?
If we go back to Brittany Griner and the fact that she was abroad 7 years playing basketball, she had to know what was going on as far as what to do, how to do it. Even if she wasn't fluent in Russian, she knew certain things that they would look for.
She's a 6'8" woman coming through the airport. Who's not going to notice her?
Come on.
It comes a point in
time
where Brittany does not consider herself a woman. Where we got to stop tiptoeing to
the friggin' she don't consider herself a woman. Just ask her.
No. Hold up a second. I said that as a tall person, which I am, same height or taller, I'm always noticed.
Yes, sir.
So I want to check you right there, bro.
Yeah, but she don't consider herself
a
woman.
You crossed the Rubicon because that was not the assessment. You heard from me and talked to me long enough and know I don't walk that tightrope. So I gotta check you there, brother, because I know anytime I move in public on the height level, I'm always asked questions, height, this, that, and the other. Very visible, so my presentation's got to be right. because it's never going to be a case of not notice. This is a woman that's going to be strikingly coming through the airport, so the visibility factor is there. That's what I'm speaking to. Anything
mm-hmm.
other viewpoint like that, you really don't know me.
But it makes it even worse. When she knew and still had the gall to carry on as if nothing was going on. You got to know the laws wherever you are. I've never been to Asia. Well, actually, I was in Japan once, but a place like Singapore, which is so strict you can't even spit on the sidewalks, hell no. You really got to know where you're at all times because you don't know who's looking at you. You don't know who's following you. You don't know who's trying to make you. And I've seen all that happen in Germany. For Brittany to carry on this far, I get the feeling, and I'm fearful, that she will be the Christmas addicts of World War III. If somebody don't check on her soon, I think she's going to be in serious problem. Yes.
Mike, something to look at here, okay, just on the surface, I would say she's part black, part white, and probably mixed up with something else, too.
Right.
Forget all that. You know, when we were talking about Kyrie Irving, whether or not he was going to take the shot or not, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Didn't the question come up, okay, he plays in New York, there's another
mm-hmm.
team down the street, still in New York.
Yeah.
Okay.
Allegedly.
You've got a few miles. There's a team in the D.C. Baltimore area where the rules change.
Yeah.
So I hear there's a team in North Carolina. The rules change. Skip over about an hour flight, southeast Atlanta.
Yeah.
Another state, Georgia. Rules change.
Yep.
You know, didn't she go to Baylor?
Yep.
Which means she played in, you know, she played in a conference that was in more than one state. So to get caught like this, you got to be hooked on stupid is the best way I can say it. Because you know better.
Mm-hmm.
You know better. And so you're willing to, I guess she was trying to play her white card.
Because
the last picture mm-hmm. I saw of her, she has kind of blondish looking hair and whatever.
Yep.
And, you know, I don't get what some of these people use for brains at times. Because,
and I'm telling you, man, you cannot place a premium on stupid.
Remember I was mentioning to you the other night, this is like Oprah thinking that, she, you know, when she went to, what was it, France or whatever, and thought that, hey, I'm Oprah. And no, you know, you might be Oprah someplace, but you ain't Oprah here.
That's right. She went to
boutique in New York City that she went
was
to, a man. Private boutique in the fashion district right in Manhattan.
It's called,
and they were like, they did not see. She did deal with some stuff overseas, true.
They
but right there in New York City,
way.
She got denied. They thought they were like, you know, they're like, what you doing, Jemima? You know,
right.
I mean, we don't know you. You know, Al Abdo's talked about to me directly, real quickly, that when he won, he's from Newark, right? And so when he won the NBA championship, right, as a coach of the Warriors, that they had Al Idol's Day in Newark. I think Kenneth Gibson, the brother, was the mayor of Newark at the time, right? So Al Idol's Day, right? And he's telling me the story out there in the college, back when it was still called the Coliseum in Oakland. And he's telling me that the guy who owned a local Cadillac dealership, right? And I've shared the story with many people. He was just raving about Al. Hey, Al Idol's the son of Newark. Whenever he's here, he's got access to a Cadillac and, you know, on and on and on, you know, and they gave him the key to the city. So the next day, he needed to get somewhere. And his wife was like, say, now, don't rent a car. Remember that guy from the Cadillac dealership told you that, you know, you could always come by and he could lease you a Cadillac and give you, you know, right? Go see him. And I was humble. He said, well, all right. Then he said he decided to because his wife was really convinced him. He said he went to talk to dude, item, and he didn't even recognize Al Idols.
Wow.
Next day, didn't even recognize him. And this is from Al Idols himself in a direct conversation I had with him. All right. So that ties into what you're saying. He said, the guy looked, he said, Eric, I looked at that. He said, that's why I don't believe none of this hype. And he picked up a newspaper and all these articles written about this player, that player. He said, this is malarkey. He said, I don't buy into any of this because this is my experience. The day I got mm-hmm. key to the city, just won an NBA championship, told by a guy who went on forever about how, you know, take care of me, my family. When I come there, I just needed a car for, you know, a few hours. I went there and he said, Eric, I looked dude in the eye. I could literally tell he didn't recognize me. He wasn't
mm-hmm.
that good an actor.
I believe.
Okay, so Eric, what you're saying is that it was a money grab. Or they just said, we're just going to put on a show, make everybody think so.
Guy got a free promotion for his Cadillacs. You know, what does Sonny Corleone say in The Godfather? Hey, the Moulin Yans are really liking the policy. They're driving them big Cadillacs
right.
now.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That's exactly right. And if you remember, when Terrell Owens came to Buffalo as a free agent, they gave him the key to the city, theoretically. But as he was looking for a place to live, he was told on at least two occasions that, well, this crib ain't your crib. We have somebody else in mind for this. Now, only black people can experience being given a key to the city and have that key not fitting in.
Bill Russell, can he have done something? Is there any more he could have done for Boston?
Oh, please.
I mean, so Russell, who never had to promote, if anyone does any research on Russell and Robinson, there's not an athlete today that did try to do more diaspora-wise, in any case, even going back to the continent, than them two dudes that never get highlighted at all.
Mm-hmm.
Right, Russell was all that and beyond the bag of chips, you know, in terms of what he was literally about, the black thing and his presence. He wasn't like an invisible man, you know.
Yep.
He just wasn't one looking for the pub. I mean, he buys a house in a certain district of Boston and he comes home and someone defecates in his bed when he gets back into his new house in this part of Boston. And Cousy wrote a whole book how he feels so bad, how he, you know, he didn't step up for Russell. It's too late, Bob. All right?
Bob,
and so we've seen these things historically, man, over and over and over again. And it's some really underbelly-ish with this stuff. Like, I mean, Wilt was under investigation for FBI throwing games for many years. Okay? You know, and we can paint the picture how great Chamberlain is, but Wilt was well known, not saying he was ever part of this because nothing panned out, as Hoover would say, you know, but he was under investigation.
Wasn't like he wasn't trying. Yep.
You know, you hear what I'm saying? He was under investigation. Now, I had a conversation with my father about that because, you know, he met Chamberlain, all these things like that. And he was like, well, I see it kind of difficult, you know, how you could throw a game. I was like, shit, you got to do getting that many field goal attempts up. I mean, you know, you got to rock that many times. Now, there's nothing to substantiate. There's nothing proof, but he was under investigation, playing career.
Hey, Eric, help me understand this. If this is the case, then what kind of juice did Lombardi have?
Yeah, Vincenzo Lombardi. Says enough.
Explain that one to me.
He saved Paul Horning's ass.
Lynn Dawson going in the Super Bowl one, right? I mean, Willie and Nero, like, yo, hey, Lynn, man. And then he was being associated with fixing shit, Dawson.
That's exactly right. I want to pause for a hot second if I can, because in addition to all the gentlemen on this list, I have my fellow Torian here. He was born the day before me. He's always on time. I've known this man for a long, long time. We covered games together. He's been a vital cog in our engine, and I appreciate his input. My brother Patrick Farrar's in the house. Patrick, can you hear me?
Live and living color, and the bill collector happy, but I ain't.
Hey, look at your next quarterback. You're getting it from the Buffalo Bills. Oh, my gosh.
Oh, boy. The BS is on. Last week, God told me. Come on. Wait, guys, come
on. Patrick, are you the third car in line for the burgers?
No. No, not tonight. I'm not doing this year. Some stuff happened, but it's hopping over there. That's for sure. But one thing I want to pass, and, you know, last week, and I forgot, and I left a note to the studio, but have a list of all the questions they asked the guys at the combine, right? And I got to find it, and hopefully next week I can have it with me. But the fact that the guy that they're trying to push is the number one quarterback, the kid Pickett from Pittsburgh, the best thing that they can come with was his hand size. And I'm going, well, they can tell about his hand size when the boy saw him touchdown pass with Pittsburgh this season, and you can see what his hand size. Come in. The BS is already starting, you know. Mm-hmm. And
isn't that kid from Liberty, the brother from Liberty, turning it out down there in the combine?
That brother turned out. Now, your point is well taken, because they're going to find something on him, because he's originally from Auburn, and he went from Auburn to Liberty.
Auburn, yeah.
Yeah, and that's a trip. But you know, they're going to find something.
Patrick, it's gonna be red meat and white women. You know how this plays out.
Well, you know something.
Somewhere Boondini Brown agrees with you, Tony.
Mm-hmm. And
OJ Simpson on line two. OJ Simpson on line two.
And guys, if it's white women, it's gonna be a scandal in Liberty, because you know they ain't supposed to do that, you know. But you know,
that's right. That's naughty. You can't do that sort of thing.
He's not even supposed to know how to spell the word fornicate.
But the founder's son is with a hooker and a pitcher drinking the brown liquor.
But he had a Bible in his pocket. But he had a Bible in his pocket, so they looked the other way. So he's good.
That's right.
I thought he said fair hooker, Mike.
King James Bridge version, of course.
Fair hooker.
Yes.
Yes, he did. Fair hooker, right? Greatest wide receiver in history's name. Fair hooker.
Number 49. Yes, he did. Fair hooker. Yeah. For a while in the 70s, he was the number one receiver. That's how bad the offense had gotten. You know,
he was
fair. Brother's name was Fair Hooker.
That's right.
I smacked his pappy behind that shit, but that's another story. Patrick, aside from saying thank you for your great work,
what is it
looking like in terms of the coffers being filled up close to the NCAAs? I made the statement earlier. There were about $20 billion between the Super Bowl and this.
Money's gonna be flowing like the Niagara Falls. It's already flowing because I said last week, they don't know who's gonna win. I found out today, if there's indication of what's gonna happen, the viewership is gonna go up on one game. Lets me know it's hotter than a pancake at Christmas time. You know, Duke had the number one rated TV basketball show in the last 3 years. That's how hot basketball is for viewing, and the people who make money on TV are extremely happy. Wow. The marketing people that I've been tracking for the last couple of days expect it, it's going to be interesting to see how it works out. No one's going to know. Already there are some games, some teams in the Big East. Everybody thought Xavier was going to turn out, but we beat them tonight. There's going to be some upsets
in the tournament that's going to make it interesting, man. It really is. I'm looking forward to it.
Wow. Who's that whistling?
Some dude.
Damn. I was going to say, you know, that's another thing that's happened to us during this thing that's standing here. The supposed people running this thing at Blog Talk Radio have attempted several times, and I say several times, to impede our progress. It seems like a bunch of brothers can't sit and talk and pass on some information without some drama. And we've seen this happen often enough. We even saw the mouse try to influence early on, where they were literally, Gary's not here yet, but they would blatantly plagiarize our shit and come on with it just as if they had listened to the show chapter and verse the next day. You know? How do you know this?
Well, Mike, down your way tomorrow, it's going to be a hot night for basketball fans. My injury and fun. with the Six of Flame Nets, you know, it's I'm still saying, why has Ben Simmons even shown up? Tomorrow night.
Yes.
And they're going to talk about his mama and his mama's mama on while he's sitting down. Why go?
Mm-hmm.
Why go, man? Stay your ass home. We ain't playing. You know,
that's
but,
right.
I'm looking forward.
But I ask you, Tony, in all seriousness, because you've been there, what do you truly believe they're trying to gain from plagiarizing our shit? You would think that there was enough originality over there at the mouse for them to come off with several versions of whatever.
Well, put it this way. Absolute power corrupts absolutely. And remember, the thing, you know, it's always funny. Remember, they've always, you know, they consider themselves a quote-unquote worldwide, the worldwide leader in sports. But a lot of times, you know, you got to, you know, a lot of times they feel like in their mind they got to go sit with the help, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
But, well, especially when, because see, what I've always told folks over the years is the only difference between quote unquote us and them is numbers and reputation. That's all.
That's true.
And to be I'll take the knowledge on this current thread right now with anybody. Till the day I die. It's like, you know, there's that scene in Citizen Kane. When he, remember, he took all the writers and whatever from his rival newspaper. I didn't have to do that. These guys, y'all have always been here. So I never had to, like, you know, I never had to go to the mouse to steal something from them. They always got to come, you know. It goes back with history, you know.
Exactly.
When you find out that, you know, think of all the stuff that if George Washington Carver had been able to patent, how much more... you know, how much more he would be, whatever. I mean, he's still revered. There's no absolute doubt. But see,
that's true.
Think about it. If you're so much above everybody, why you got to take from us?
There you go. Gary says that all the time. Gary, wherever you are, get your ass back here because I know you probably. But that's exactly the point. It's like if you don't know if you don't know your subject matter, you got no business stepping onto the plate. And I guess they were surprised by that. I know they were surprised when young Travis came out there in Oklahoma City and started scooping the beat writer's beer. You know, and now they're punishing the young brother for this. And I'm upset behind that because
it's a shame. It's a shame, man.
We can't help him as much as we'd like to. But that's the reality. He did that to me.
It's an ongoing saga, right? I mean, Mike, in reality, it's an ongoing saga. I mean, we can itemize it any way we want. We can say, well, based on this perspective, Minster's, I talked to, you know, the brother, the founder of this whole entire, you know, Black Athlete Sports Network, Mr. Roland Rogers, on a number of occasions. And, you know, I mean, and, you know, I've got some incredible documentation from those experiences, his goals, how he wanted to implement certain strategies, and, you know, and not too far before he passed, that I still honor that. It may be knowing what I know about that and having the documentation, maybe certain things are not in alignment currently to what his goals were, to be frank.
Right.
And with that being said, as far back as that time period, that's been the case. And this, you know, the thing that's I'm going to quote, you know, some conversations I asked. Like I said, it's always 100% legit. That can be supported. That's why no one ever, despite as ludicrous as another person's interpretation may be of what's said here, there's never been a challenge or a rebuttal. It's been crickets.
Yes, sir.
It's been crickets. I mean, we'll come in here, and I'll come in here, and we will just drop it, and I've yet ever to get a rebuttal. But a lot of yes us that get revised a certain way. That's just 100, and it's proven.
Yep.
To the point that, you know, if you put out certain writings or certain things that should be archived and they disappear from the archives because they're too sticky, you know, for someone to read, I mean, and under the guise on a unified front, we can punch holes in the bullshit all day long, you know,
true.
And I can do it. You know, we all can do it. So it's not really sometimes within our own circles. We don't get behind who we need to get behind, who could take it to a certain level, because there's a fear factor that they may outdo the fact that I didn't maximize my fucking career the way I maybe possibly can, but let alone if someone else can. I mean, no one here is gunning for that. Myself, I'm not gunning for that. You know what I'm saying? Or anything else. I mean, I just come in organic, bring what it is. But all these organizations you have, where they've printed my material. You know what I'm saying? Literally, from other sites. I can pull it up and link it. But that does not necessarily mean that you're part and parcel. So for that standpoint, it is, to Tony's part, what he just said, he's 1,000, is that George Washington Carver, Coach John B. McLinda, we weren't out there looking for no crucibles of satisfaction or some Oscar and Emmy Award or a Tony Award from these people or some damn Pulitzer Prize.
Yeah.
Don't need that shit or their recognition or their sympathy. And even without looking for it, they give it to you all the time anyway, because what you have can't be bought, borrowed, or sold. And no one's trying to economically impact it. The moment you go into that shit, you're going to sell out. They're going to compromise you. There's no way you can do a word of mouth. So Brother Fred talks about black magic and, you know, how they certain parts were cut out. Well, I mean, true, or, well, you know, how come it hasn't taken up? Well, that's all bullshit. Because if those brothers didn't put in the work, there's no story for these people to build off on later.
Right.
You know something? You know something? But here's what's worse. Here's what's worse. What's
yes,
worse
sir.
Is the ongoing saga of the history behind the history of a particular event. Athlete or game is lost in the annals of who we know and what we know in our history.
Right.
But some white boy who's getting his dissertation at a journalism school finds
knows
somebody at you know, here's what I can do, comes out, brings it out. It said, we've been knowing that for years, to job, and gets the chance. That burns me up more than.
You're 1,000% correct, because to your point, you just want to get this in real fast because you struck a chord there. So Detroit, right? You know, Motown, correct? You know
yeah.
Motown's been wax poetic. That music's getting never going anywhere. The acts that came up, on and on, the fact that a lot of them came out of the Motor City, correct? Or relocated from the South and ended up in the Motor City, right? We know Gordy jumped off from there, the Brewster stuff, all that. This one white woman, she wrote a book on how a city like that during this time frame was able to put together this kind of musical talent. And she rooted it on the education system of how music was taught in all these schools. So these kids, these young people, understood symphony and orchestra music because they had class trips that would go there. So one of the brothers, I dislike the fact I can't recall his name. He's the one that laid the strings down as a producer to My Girl, right?
Oh, yeah.
And I can't think of the brother's name, man. He's nice as all get out, obviously, right, with the music thing with that. And so they had, he did the strings overlay to My Girl, right?
Mm-hmm.
And he said that he hated R&B, soul music. He loved orchestra. But Gordy, he said, it was a high school kid. Smokey and them put him on. at like 19 or something. Not because they put him on at 19 or at a very young age. So there was the reason they took off. If you had the talent, the skill sets, they were going to build Johnson as a trade-off with money. Now, you may not got your proper dough, you know, Barry. But the point being is, if you had the talent, the musicianship, like the Funk Brothers, you know, I mean, you know, it was like they say, listen, you could have sounded like a crow. If you had the Funk Brothers behind you, your song was going to come off. You know, so they found all these musicians, but the core of it was rooted in the education system, the musical system. Classically trained musicians is what pulled that sound off. And the woman that put all that together, beyond the fact that there were some talented people living in the projects who just wanted to come, no, this is too sophisticated. What was the training ground to make that shit pop? It was the education system and the musical systems that these people were raised on. Smokey did not become the songwriter he was because he studied Gershwin and all these type of people. He just flipped it into that kind of a music.
Right.
And Barry was a songwriter himself who flipped it.
Smokey was playing football.
He wrote for Jackie Wilson. So it goes back to your point again. This woman here put all that together at the level of depth that you're talking about, and she got the credit for it. But it's 100 of what happened.
Exactly.
And in sports, sports is really terrible. You know, I was telling the guy recently about, because he was concerned with the baseball strike, and the baseball strike, it is what it is. Basically, the owners don't want to give up that money. That's what it's going. You know, we know how that is. And he mentioned Babe Ruth, and and we talked. No one denied the greatness of Babe Ruth of his time, but when I said the records. Don't really
you mean Ed Cooley, the coach of Providence? That's Babe Ruth. I'm joking.
Hello.
The records really don't establish its fullness until after 1948. Because the brothers got in the league. We got went back and forth. I said, you have to understand something. It was in 1927 that, Babe Ruth and the Yankees went down to Cuba and got smoked. So bad that they came back home. I said because if you go to the annals of the black newspapers, you'll see it. And Ty Cobb was still in Basel. He came back home because he didn't know about the brothers in Cuba. The point is now he wants to look up and find out. Go read the Calling Boats. Go through the litany of black newspapers and information they find out. And that's my whole point. My point is, those records are established, those things are established, and you mean to tell me, I can talk about you, believe it, but if you write about it, your ice is colder than mine with information, it's a problem. And it's continued problem.
That's exactly right. You know that's right. I got G. Orlando Ledbetter with me as well. D was celebrating our 10th anniversary here on the Treat. Thanks for popping in. Do you have anything to add to the discourse, brother?
No, well, happy anniversary. Hello to the brothers. My apologies. Trying to get ready for this MEAC tournament tomorrow. Heading down.
Orlando, all you got to say is behold the green and gold. They look awful good tonight.
They struggled. That was a weird matchup, but I'm looking for it, man. I'll be calling both games Friday and the championship game on Saturday, both men and women. It'll be on YouTube and Instagram and the website. And I'm doing it in conjunction with Block Sports as well. So I'm looking forward because I'm going to be head-to-head against some jokers. They told me no. So I'm going to make them think about that no sell. But you guys are talking about music and taking it back. Like, I was in the car with my daughter the other day, and the funny thing, Enchantment came off. And she's like, wow, that woman can swing. I was like, that's not a woman, babe. I was like, that's a man. I'm like, you got to know who he is. She's like, whoa. Yeah. No. Where do we go from here? Enchantment came on. And she's like, wow. Like, listen to the artistry. And I thought, that's the sound of Philly right there. That's our music. And, to be from the city, and it's special. So my kids are really taking into listening to Teddy. I don't want my daughter to listen to too much Teddy because she's turned 13. But
turn them off. Turn them off.
Yeah. To see the younger kids like really get into what is music, not the sound that's on the radio now, but to hear what music is, and there's so many people. You talk about the Funk Brothers. That they were the sound of Motown.
Yes.
And unfortunate what happened to them, you know, with that corrupt crook, Barry Gordy, and how he beat them all out of their money.
Barry's still pimping. You know, I mean James Jamerson, you know, obviously the bass player, Supreme, staying in that pocket behind, 100 top, you know, hits, the Funk Brothers themselves, I mean, Earl Van Dyke, you know, when he came in later, and the rest of them, all of them were classically trained, you know, and
Jazzy,
you know, and you know, even Eddie Bongo, you know, that was banging on bongos, on, you know, when Marvin, you know, put that down, you know, and so the thing is, and the fact that they could capture sound to that, but they understood, you know, what you're talking about, brother, things called like rhapsody. You hardly hear a word like that associated with music these days. Rhapsody,
you know,
harmony. You know what I mean? And the mathematical formulas. I mean, it's just like the brilliance of something like I was listening to it the other day, that smoky joint when he was talking about, man, you really got a hold on me. And the way that they just, you know, crescendo that to the piano solo, I mean, where it really is really coming off where it says you really got a hold on me in a harmonic sound. It's just masterful. In a
We don't say it enough. These gentlemen and ladies are scientists. And when they lay their theorems out there in the studio, it's like you don't get the whole sum of it until sometimes after the record is over. Or then maybe that nuance you catch. Or then maybe the whispers of the bass line like in Bernadette. Stuff like that, you know. It's amazing.
My subs bringing it like he brought it.
Yep.
You know, and Barry had that thing where the first 15 seconds he had to catch her. It had to be right off the get-go.
Yep.
Right? So it was the attention getter. It was all driven in that particular, you know, rhapsody. Yep. And to the brother's point, I mean, Huff and Gamble, no joke.
You know something?
International, no joke.
I want to add something to what you're saying, that gets home. About young people listening to music, and I had to come to this conclusion. You know, my graduate work was in ethnomusicology, and I try to be even handed in terms of what I listen to, and understanding what young people go through, what they listen to. We're in the days now of rap and what they listen to, and I have to respect what they listen to. Unfortunately, it boils down to this. Unfortunately. Young people today don't hear music. They don't have an ear. And that really bothers me to no extent.
Well, first of all, it's digital. It's not analog no more, right? So most of them have never heard a digital record. I mean, an analog record ever. And when they do, they'll fall asleep. Trust me. They'll fall asleep like in 2 seconds.
And secondly, I relate that because I have to tell the production. I relate to the same thing about with young people watching TV. A lot of educators think that, well, Mr. Farrell, you know, this should be easy, young people. I said, no, kids don't watch television. They don't.
Yep.
You have to teach them to watch television. They're looking back and the times that when they grow up, it's the same. It's not the same. So we're, you know, they don't hear music, they don't see television, they don't know what television, and it all boils down to you have to teach people this again to understand what we're talking about because they have no clue.
I don't think people realize.
Dr. Dre, correct? You get a guy like Dr. Dre, right? And he has an association with digital music. That's his forte. He uses 70s hook stuff. All the samples of 70s music, authentic musician, right? Those are the samples that are the baseline of rap. James Brown is the most sampled artist in any rap genre. Landslide, no one's close.
Yes.
okay? And so they loop it in these, but they take the core out of it and they create the sound. So a person like Dre, who was able to sell his mental mindset that he's able to hear these sounds and lay it on that mixing board to come up with the tunes and beats. And so they were able to, Apple was able to buy the, in his intellectual properties of his intellectual thought and plug it in the vehicles of Beats by Dre, headphones by Dre, right? So it's the digital sound. Dude, how do you do this? He literally sold his mental property that he came through the ears of his dome to put those sounds together in that mixing board. They captured it. Isn't that some shit? And he sold it for billions of dollars. Where he never should have. He sold it for a trillion less than what he should have gotten.
And you know what's
so right? You can buy a car with his beats in it. It's digitized.
And you know something? Dre can play the piano pretty well. You'd be surprised how well he can play piano.
You can't be that kind of musicianship without an ear for it first, right? And he has
that. That's right.
He's able to, but what he's able to do, which is his gift, and for a person to get paid that kind of money out of Compton, California, and to say, yo, this dude's on to something here. What's the intellectual property for that? Show us the magic of this on this mixing board.
That's
the
right. There you go.
Technical, the moment you get technical, it can be harnessed and taken.
That's right. That's
why. Now, the moment it becomes technical, you can't do funk that way. The only genre that has never been able to get duplicated is funk. Blues, white
they
folks are everywhere.
You cannot
blues,
duplicate
blues
funk.
Everywhere.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Funk is the only genre that has never been morphed.
Right. That's why I'm playing it now. That's why I'm playing it now on our show. We do funk from A to Z. Funk is the original music. And
you can't
just remember, every time you hit that one,
you can't play
it
funk, you got it from inside.
One,
no,
the one.
That's ain't working. That's right. With George Washington Carver notwithstanding, funk musicians are the original mad scientists. You don't believe me? Listen to Cool and the Gang. Listen to the Midnight Movers. They would.
It's nonstop. I mean, the Dazz Band. I mean, if you go to the Dazz Band, Mike, Dazz, Disco Jazz, you can't do that.
Oh yeah, Detroit.
That's right,
Detroit.
From that realm, from the Brass Construction, who's ever tried to do that shit?
Well, Parquet. The Bar Caves was better than Earth, Wind & Fire. If you listen
Holy
to
Ghost.
Like,
you want to move your spirit to the Bar Caves of Holy Ghost.
That's right. We can make the Holy Ghost jump and shake his ass.
The Holy Ghost
for
the Bar Caves. I'll call your spirit down.
All that
you can't duplicate that. That's pure musicianship.
The irony of originality is a lost
on
me.
That's what starts.
It's the fact that all these guys, all these ladies are doing things that perpetuate the culture that they never wanted to acknowledge. Just like I was talking about Eric Clapton and Jimi Hendrix. Clapton took his whiteness to the nth degree and put it in front of Jimi Hendrix. And all Jimi did was drop a few chords in his ass. And he got embarrassed the fuck out. You nobody ever told me he was this good. That's right. And when he ran into Eddie Hazel, he was told the same thing again. We already know. We already have this. It's been like this. And we know how we do. We don't say anything about it. We just play. We don't say anything about it. We just sing. And I can tell you from all the time I've been in the business, the number of people I can count, I'd have at least $200 for every girl who's been drinking sing like Chaka Khan. Or every girl who thinks they can sing like Tina Marie. Stop. It just doesn't happen every day.
Yeah.
Someone like Evelyn Champagne King was like a C-rated artist in terms of the era she was in because there were so many strong songstresses out there.
Yes.
Stop. I mean, has anyone heard Stephanie Mills sing? Hello.
Yeah, I just know Stephanie a month ago. Stephanie can sing like she was when she was 25.
Yeah, so
long ago.
listen, brother,
I mean,
you got Stephanie Mills fire and design?
That was Tina and Rick. But what was that one with Stephanie Mills and
Stephanie, you saw Feel a Fire. That was written by people.
That's Peebo Bryson wrote that song.
That's
right.
Yeah, he wrote that song. But the thing that's funky, you talk about Minnie. If you listen to Minnie Riperton they can go funky soul on you to blues. Like it's impeccable.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we don't respect the music here, but if you go overseas and you listen to Jamiroquai, you listen to Incognito,
I mean, Sade rings in that same overseas genre too. But the thing is, if you look at someone like the Pointer Sisters, who weren't even considered like A-listers in their era, and hear how they bring it.
And guys, don't forget, we
were riding around one day, and I had this R&B singers. I don't know whether it was labeled some mixtape of the the sisters from the 70s, right? And he said to me, he says, all these women from back in the day can outdo anyone today.
Music came naturally.
I mean, Beyonce cannot even be one of the Supreme. You ever hear Flo Ballard sing a solo?
Yes,
guys, two words. Phyllis Hyman. Thank you.
There's a release of Phyllis Hyman performing in Tokyo, 1989. It just came out in YouTube. You watch Phyllis Hyman, and she was joined by Angie Goldfield on stage, right? Phyllis killed herself because of the promotion of Clive Owen, that fucking devil. You see him all over. She killed herself because they were promoting Whitney as the voice and the sound of music. And it's not even there. I mean, there's an exception to the rule all the time where, all the stars align and you come out with a Tina Marie or you come out with Two Fisted Love. I see her name. Help me out, brothers. They can sing Two Fisted Love. She wasn't even black. Oh.
That's right.
Not Tina Marie.
Yeah.
No.
Not Lisa Stansfield. Two Fisted Love. No. 70s, 80s.
70s.
Tina Marie.
Yeah. But the music is crazy because you can hear so much sounds that's coming out of Europe. There's a piece where Teddy, and they talked about it on a documentary, he sang Lady by Lionel Richie. It was written by Kenny Rogers.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He sang that in 1980, 2 months before the accident. It's on YouTube now. If you listen to Teddy sing that song, right? It's embarrassing because you hear our moms and our aunts and grandmoms like screaming all over the man. But that man and what these people did back in the 70s, like it was the apex of music. And as great as Teddy was, you got Rapin who said, fuck you, Barry Gordy. I'm going to make my album and I'm going to sing all the tracks. I'm going to become the first person ever in music to dub my voice over my voice. And I'm not going to do it six times. He dubbed his own voice on
What's Going On.
Best album ever, What's Going On.
Not just What's Going On.
He did Vulnerable before that. And
That album was going on. I'm with you there because that shit starts revolution.
Don't do this stuff.
but he was into it. You saw the same monkey layering of the
and it was conscious, man. See,
on
the thing about what's going on, it wasn't conscious. It wasn't a bunch of bullshit love ballads, because at some point in time, that had to flip out.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So it was very exceedingly
Gordy,
conscious.
Gordy,
raising.
And Gordy never wanted him to release that. Gordy never wanted him to release that.
And he went past him. I mean, like, he tried to do the same thing and control the creative genius of Stevie Wonder, too. I mean, you know, I mean, come on. I mean, The Secret Life
right,
of
right.
Plants.
The songs
of Have
life.
You ever
right.
listened
yes.
to that?
Yeah. Mm. But look, what's going
I mean,
on?
He's breaking down
was...
the science of plants.
Yes.
Right.
But that album was hell, What's Going On. Marvin made that in 1968. And he's been Mary Gordy for 3 years.
He held him up because it was two protests. It wasn't sugarcoated. And it was the first time that he allowed the songwriters like Dolan, Hozier, Dozier, Holland, Dozier, Ashford, and Simpson, those songwriters mm-hmm. he had, they had to push back because he allowed them to have a creative rights. Stevie was going to bounce unless he had his creative rights, and he put together the most fantastic music that was conscientious and was written by himself. You see what I'm saying? That's what happened. The control was gone.
You got to tell the truth. Ray Gordy was a pimp. He thought like a pimp. And he wasn't thinking like somebody who was a visionary because he was making money. He wanted Marvin Gaye to do Hitchhike and all this other bullshit because he was making money. He was thinking pennies and not dollars. He was not thinking classic. He was thinking serve the immediate need. Marvin was
so ahead. He brought Marvin on to be a black Frank. He was a drummer, a session drummer
yep.
first. And then they tried to turn him into a black Frank Sinatra. And
He wanted to see ballads like Sinatra. He tried to be a football player. He tried out for the Lions. The next week he wanted to be an NBA player. So, you know, he was always trying different things. But what he was, and to Gordy's credit, you know, I heard it through the grapevine, he's still the number one selling record of all time in Motown. That's the top hit.
Right.
Nothing sold more than I heard it through the grapevine.
Frankie Gaye is the better singer between Marvin. Like, if you heard Frankie Gaye sing, that family is just incredible because, you know, his nephew Donnie is out singing now. And so that is so much talent in that family. It's crazy.
Not even sing.
Right.
Yeah. Not even sing.
And you know what? No auto-tune, no studio support.
No.
You had to sing. It was legitimate auditory. And you had to be able to command that. And you had to transmute sound. They understood the science of sound and voice inflections. And see, when you start talking about someone, you know, that I can relate to, I mean, the world knows her as Whitney Houston. Those who were around the way know her as Nippy, right, from East Orange, New Jersey.
That's right.
Those who know Nippy was no jiznay. You know what I mean? And the thing is, if she ever got to the level of maturity where she could sing a song, you know what I mean, she could shift the universal chord with her vocals.
Mm-hmm.
Because that was coming from a whole amped up level of pure auditory vocals. They created her to be the Clive Stevens, the Clive gangster who's his body count is high. You know what I mean? she got tweaked.
I don't like
that going into that direction amongst the pop sound. But if you would have gave her some songs, you know, that was basically some conscientious level songs, and she had that level, she would be on a whole different plateau and plane, just like James Brown talks about. His sound was never truly sound because he went to Polydor, which is in Europe, I believe in Holland somewhere. A lot of his records were on Polydor. They tweaked the sound. He said he had to just go with it, even though that was not really the funk he wanted to push. So even though that's the funk we all heard, it wasn't what James's funk is. They thought that was way too motivating and moving if he had to introduce at the level he wanted to bring it.
Too
so Polydor tweaked it in the engineering room.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. So Whitney, Nippy, I know one's a below like Nippy. I mean, so does he bring it. I've seen a live. Remember these things back in the day, concerts on the pier in New York? They always had these concerts on the pier, Mike. back in the day, like 80s or something, always would have like a jazz festival on the piers out there in NYC in Manhattan. I've seen some of those sometimes. Remember those? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Thank you for coining it, man. And I would go out there a few times, but Nippy was raw, man. You could give her and put her a microphone and just give her no audience and 50,000 people, and everyone's going to leave with their ears ringing.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. That's what happened.
I got a question for the brother for doing the HBCU games, right? That's a question. Basketball games. Do they have any plays that you've seen so far, that could go to the next level of any kind? Do they leave NBA?
Yes.
Yeah.
Chris Bankston from Norfolk State can be a banger in the league. He's athletic. He has a full-size body. Pretty decent touch. Kyle O'Quinn hung around in the league for a couple of years. I expect Bankston to hang around in the league maybe about 4 or 5 years. There's one kid out of Howard, Steven Settle. He's the best shooter in all of college
basketball. I've seen him.
Watched him tonight. Unfortunately,
yeah.
They got upset by Coppin State.
Which I should have put some money on the game because my whole staff called that. It was a Coppin played Howard a couple of weeks ago in Baltimore, and Coppin was the little kid that the bully used to take their shit every week, and that the little kid punched the shit out of Howard. He punched the shit out of him, and Howard walked away like, okay, you got me. But that punch hurt. So and Juan Wagner can outcoach the brother down there from Duke that's coaching Howard. But I say Settle is nice. There's a guy, a small forward out of Bethune-Cookman that has the body. I don't know if he necessarily has the mind because I haven't seen them. I haven't called any SWAC games this year. And there's a kid out of Livingston that I think can definitely play in the league. He can definitely play in the league.
Patrick, just to add to that, the weekend of the Final Four down in New Orleans, they're going to have an HBCU All-Star game. They're going to break the two teams. They're going to break the teams down, one's the McClendon team, one is the Big House team, and they're going to break it down between the SWAC. I think they're going to put like the SWAC, the SIAC, and then the team is on one team, and then the MEAC, CIAA, in another, and it's going to be played at the University of New Orleans.
That's nice.
Right.
That's nice.
Rob Jones is going to coach that from Norfolk State. And someone asked me this question today, and you know I'm a Spartan true and true. Everybody that knows me knows that. But they were asking the question, where does Norfolk State fall in the seeding? Do they receive a 16 seed or do they get a 15 seed? And I said Norfolk State this year, by the record that they played, they can be a 14 seed if they win this tournament because of their record this year. They are top five mid-major team, and they've been that way all year long. Yeah. Now, we got this kid, Joe Bryant, you know, he ain't ready for the big time, but somebody's telling me he is. But I think to answer your question, it will be Bankston, it will be Settle, it'll be the small forward out of Bethune-Cookman, and the power forward out of Livingston College. Those are the players that I've seen. There's a bunch of guards, but I don't think the guards are going to make it because they're just not on that level.
Okay, for sure. Yeah, because I think that Norfolk State in the game, and they look good. They do look good.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Matter of fact, they were on ESPN. They're on ESPN, so I'm picking up there.
Right.
Yeah. It's good to know that. Good to know that.
I want to say to our listeners. Go ahead.
I was going to say, watch out for the MEAC tournament, T-Mac. Here's an interesting thing. Everyone's talking about Tennessee State going to the SWAC.
Yeah.
Tennessee State, I believe,
Tennessee State's going to join the MEAC along with Chicago State.
That's a hell of a road trip.
No, brothers. No, I not to let the cat out of the hat. There is a deal, two deals coming in which once HBCUs have the ability to travel via air, like the white colleges do. Now you pay attention, because if I can get Delaware State down to Nashville and play in Hillbilly Vegas on a Monday night and have my kids in class on a Tuesday morning because they flew back home, now my ability to recruit and these players, they look a lot different. And so there's a deal out there. I'm working with some brothers who have airplanes that are seriously trying to make this happen. Because everybody right now, HBCU is a thing, and everybody want to feel like they're doing something. So hopefully
Biden,
it works.
And Biden gave them a bunch of money.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And Orlando.
Biden could have given every black person in this country a fucking $1 million and wiped out student debt for that shit he sent over to the fucking Ukraine.
Come on.
Don't start telling the truth. Now you're going to get in trouble.
There's a reason why in the African diaspora he is known as Jim Crow Joe.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. He is not our friend. I say that to anybody in a heartbeat. And I got to give the professor credit for this, because it's the professor that opened up my head to seeing the other level of this. And it's like, we don't have no friends. We got, literally. And if we do it right, we're all we need. But to say straight up that someone's going to try to do something beneficial on our behalf, it's a fucking reach.
I know some. In terms of HBUC baseball, man, I just saw two games. Was it last week? So the contract with the teams, because they were mentioning some HBCUs baseball players. Eight but four or five of them are black. The rest of them are Puerto Rican and white, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Especially Bethune. Bethune's been like that for almost 10 years.
I mean, they can play. I ain't got nothing against them, but they can play. They can play.
No. It just speaks to where the sport is in regard to us. Now numbers are slowly going up, but again, unfortunately it's going to go down before we're going to have to go through a situation where the numbers are going to go down. And I'm not just talking about the major league. That's a whole other story. But even just on like the HBCUs and on the Division I levels, there's some brothers out there that look, you know, I'm still trying to figure out what the hell the idiots from Flushing were doing when they lowballed themselves out of a Kumar Rocker.
Mm-hmm. Well, but that's the Mets, you know, that's your boys, man.
That kid's gonna be a star, and they had a chance to get him, but of course, you know, all of a sudden, Daddy Cohen didn't have any money. All of a sudden.
Yep. Yeah, well, you know, you call them broke. The city's running out of money. What do you expect? But
Did you see how very quietly MLB signed a TV deal with Apple TV? But remember, they're losing money. And don't forget.
Yeah, that's right.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. And they're about to sign another deal with Apple on another date. On Amazon on another date.
Sure.
Apple's going to be on Friday nights, right? I think it's like
one's going to be Thursday and one's going to be Friday.
Yeah, well, I know one's on Friday.
Yeah. So
look up for Apple. Look up for Amazon. They're going to try to. They're going to hire hurt Herb's streak to do their NFL games.
That's a waste right there. I'm sorry.
He can barely, no disrespect, Patrick, but he can barely do college games. What the hell are they going to do when he's doing NFL games?
Tony, and guess what? He can do the college too. They're going to let him do ESPN and the NFL. I'm going, what? Come on,
good
Lord.
Good Lord. Well, you know what? Put this way. My mute button will never be out of style. I'll just leave it at
that. Right. Gentlemen,
Herb Street might as well. I mean, Romo's getting $17 million, so you know, Aikman's getting what, 15 or more,
exactly.
So might as well join the club.
And they're all salivating
money in the booth than as a player.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And they're all salivating at someone wanting to hire Giselle's husband too at some point.
Oh yes, Lord. Oh,
he's
going to
get broken off. Yeah, he's going to get broken.
Yeah,
no question.
Between him and Sean Payton, he's probably going to be out there for about a year or so.
Man,
I still think Daniel's not done yet. I still believe Jerry Jones will try to sign Tom Brady for one more year. And the asking price would be $50 and $75 million. So stay tuned.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Of course, I could be
wrong.
I think there's some meat in that sandwich.
For the last
item before we get to final thoughts, you already know General Wilson has a new location. He's moving to Rocky Mountain in Denver, and he'll be quarterbacking the Broncos. Now, Teddy Bridgewater stays put. They've got solid quarterbacking at the most important position. Teddy has already won with these guys, and they already know that they can achieve a level of success. Russell Wilson is another step up. You have to say it because they won't give him credit. Russell Wilson, if you talk about people who made the league money, Russell Wilson made the NFL a whole heap of money because Seattle was an outpost. It wasn't a football city. It was, we got to come out here again. He made the team viable. And whether I like this guy or not, Pete Carroll made a smart move in starting him because he got the best player in play. But that, I can never be totally pissed at Carroll. He's an asshole, but he was right on the fact that Wilson should be a starter. Since then,
Mike, I very rarely say these words, fantasy football, but I'll put it right out there. You can pencil in Mr. Judy for 1,000 yards next year. I'm saying it
right now.
Yeah.
I agree. Russell has one major move where he picks one guy to be his go-to. He's done that his whole career, from Golden Tate to Jermaine Kearse.
Your boy Golden Tate.
To Paul Richardson, to Duke Baldwin, to the other brother, 16.
At the very least, he should name his next son Wilson Tate. At the very least.
Yes.
Golden Tate Sr. was a wide receiver.
He
was?
He always had one receiver.
We were there together. I was weird.
Get out of here!
Golden Tate Senior. Yeah, his father played at Tennessee State. He sure did.
Oh,
747 Adams. Mm-hmm.
That's
with
right.
Gary Kinnebrew, that crew.
Play with
what?
Which
did Zach
Kinn?
Yeah, 747.
747 was throwing the Golden. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I didn't know that.
Senior.
Well,
Golden 747 senior,
got
yeah.
cheated in the league, so he should have been the one
to Canada. Yeah, he went to Canada.
He was playing in the CFL. Yeah.
That boy could
know had a golden arm like 747, man. He could wing it.
Yes, Lord. Matter of fact, he came behind my boy, Kenny Pettiford.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And they had 747, Kennebrew, Richard Dent, McDonald Oden. There was an offensive lineman that played, Steve Moore, that played with the Patriots in the Super Bowl. They were all there at the same time. And there were some others that got to the league that was on that team. The brother, Brian Ransom, backup quarterback for
That's
Warren
right.
Moon.
Yeah.
He was 747's backup.
That's some information, man. I remember 747.
Logan Payne was catching bombs from the man senior. Mike Jones, too, who played a little bit of receiver in the league as well. All that was on the same. They called it the two-ton backfield. I forgot the other brother's name, but Kennebrew was the other ton, half-ton.
Yeah, oh, he played with the Bengals for a while.
Yeah, the Bengals and Bills.
Yeah, in the Bills. Mm-hmm. And Richard Dent, Super Bowl MVP, Hall of Famer, he was on that D-line, yeah.
Gentlemen, I don't know how well he'll play once he's there in Denver, but we know these two things about Russell Wilson. He'll always be prepared, and he will always play hard. You know, Russell has never cheated anybody out of a dime. We can't say that about a lot of players, but Russell always gives you his money's worth, and he does his work. You know, too many cats get by on talent and skill. And knowing he's a quarterback, he knew he had to be better. That's the kind of mindset we need for some of these future field generals, so that they know when they go out there, there's nobody else. They have to rule over all. Can't be satisfied with just being I. You got the.
Let me ask you this though, Mike. I mean, you're the quarterback whisperer, man. You're like dead on, man. You're like my QB guru. You know, with the breakdowns, because a lot of your assessments be like pinpoint. So let me ask you this question, since you brought up Wilson. Is he going the way of what's happened with these other brothers who started quarterbacks and then moved on to another team when they got maxed out at certain franchises? McNabb at Philly, not the same afterwards. Cam in Carolina, Super Bowl, not the same afterwards.
So.
McNabb, too, not the same afterwards. Wilson now gets moved on, you know.
I don't think this will happen to Jimmy Wilson, because he's built a little differently.
Yeah.
When Wilson gets in the huddle, he has a grunt. He plays like he has a grunt. You know, this
and Mike,
a young man.
And Mike is,
who's his receivers
and Mike,
in Denver?
He got players, man, around him.
He got
Judy,
Cortland Sutton. And the tight end, Patrick, he should be all-world after a season with him.
Okay.
No question about it.
Eric, your point's well taken. You know why? Because most cases, a quarterback will go into position, and he got to be the man. He got to do everything. That's all on him.
That's right.
With a different team. They got a defense, and they got two guys in offense.
I started thinking about this, man. I'm like, okay, Randall, once he maxed out in Philly, you know, he was out.
Yep.
Things started shifting. Moon in Houston moved on.
Mm-hmm.
Things started shifting.
Mm-hmm.
Cam in Carolina, things started shifting. McNabb
mm-hmm.
in Philly moved on. Things weren't the same. And I'm like, man, it's just kind of a deal. But if you're saying Wilson's got a hookup in Denver, why
different.
He took the no trade clause off the table. That makes sense why he took the no-trade clause off the table.
He thinks he's the best. Wilson comes in the hole and says, I know I'm the best. Now, we still
got a better offensive line, too. That can
yes.
be
yes.
the
yes.
offensive
yes.
line.
Yes.
It's definitely an upgrade.
Yeah.
Okay.
The funny thing is, we were talking about this the other night. You know, this isn't Matt Robinson coming to Denver. This isn't Brock Osweiler coming to Denver. This is a guy that's been there a couple of Super Bowls and knows the lay of the land, and he still has tread on his tires.
Tony, let me add this, Tony. He's everything he didn't have at Seattle, he got at Denver.
Pretty much.
That makes a lot of sense, because that offensive
line.
You know,
he doesn't
have to
build up
him.
He was getting trashed on that offensive line the last few years, man. Put it this way.
He was the original 12 years a slave, or in this case, 12 years a slave.
I mean, he was getting beat the fuck down. Well, I mean, that makes a lot of sense, because if you look at the AFC West, their defensive lines is nowhere near as tough as the NFC West was.
No.
In comparison, like, if the Niners bring it, the Niners bring with Bosa and company, right? The obviously
right.
Donald and company in L.A. And then
right.
Arizona gets after the quarterback. So now it's Kansas
mm-hmm.
City, the Raiders, and San Diego
yeah.
twice
mm-hmm.
a year.
Yep. 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 Those two games. Mike. Another prediction. Both. I'm willing to bet you, if not one, if not both of those matchups will be like a Monday night or a Sunday night game.
No doubt about it.
Bear Wilson, Mahomes Wilson.
Yeah. That's right.
And from the marketing point, first of all, this deal's been going on for a couple of weeks now. It didn't just happen.
Yep.
It's been going on. It was finalized at the combine. Everybody thought they were going to Rodgers. They were not going to Rodgers. They were going to Wilson. And this is all you need to know. When the deal was signed from the front office ticketing, within one day, they sold 97% of the seats. Case closed.
Ow.
Damn.
Denver.
It's not like Denver is people come to the games with the Broncos, you know.
97% gone, one day.
Well, you know, also, Elway had to sign off on that. He knew how good he was. So the fact that he said, yeah, sign this, he was a done deal. He knew.
Yeah, because
in all honesty, Elway
they were trolling him.
Yeah.
No. Good for Russell, man. Especially if he gets an offensive line, because man, I got tired of
oh, he got it.
Beat
yeah.
down. Wow.
Oh, yeah. No question.
Oh, he should file.
Melvin charges. Gordon should run. Gordon should get at least 1,000 out of this. The other backs
should beat the fuck up, man.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The tight end is very good.
I mean, that's a strong brother, man.
I think Judy will really blossom in that offense. Judy will blossom, and Cortland Sutton will get his share of deep passes. No question.
Well,
but once he has them by himself and they have some time together, I expect a lot of passing going on. No doubt about it.
Well, Mike, the question is, who's next?
That's Murray.
Murray.
No, he ain't going to I ain't paying Murray yet. I'm sorry. I'm not paying him yet.
Yeah. See that whole situation out there, that's Cliff Kingsbury trying to save his job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He basically just threw
his guy under the bus.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Is Deshaun gonna
suit
up next year?
Well, we know
one person. So might be going to Seattle.
If he does, sad on him. The bottom line is, I know one person who's not going to see it, and that's Mr. Ridley. You dumb fuck. I can't believe somebody who had it so together would have it unravel on them so quickly. You know, I'm sorry. I cannot bless you.
Mike, I was telling you, the point in time, you can't candy coat this shit.
You can't.
You
can't.
Nope.
Mike, I told you, you can't cross the borders with a war to
get ready to rise up and bring a vape pen with live hashish vape pen.
Mike, who's the referee that messed up in NBA? I was working in the league at the time. Don was his name?
Donahue.
Yeah, okay. I told you. I was in Nets at the time. And I was talking to one of the VPs, and I was saying, we had a conversation. I said, how can somebody be that crazy NFL, an NBA ref? And we're talking, and this is what he told me. He said, Falcon, everybody can do something crazy. But what these people don't know is that the league has people through the Justice Department to go to the league to see who's doing what all the time. Fast forward to 2022. The league has this group called the Genius Sports Group, which is hired by the NFL. And know what their job is? To go to monitor all betting of all games all the time. Now, if you want to, maybe you can go overseas and do something. But in this country, if you make a bet, they're monitoring everybody, all players, all the freaking time. Mm-hmm. So the notion of they're going to, they're following them. And here's what it says. And that's one of the reasons why the owners got together years ago. We're going to increase the salaries expeditiously to stop it. Somebody's always going to do something stupid, like his brother. But, man,
that's right.
If you're going to spend $1,500 to lose 11 men, don't even talk to me.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Well,
that's the one.
Is the one they decided to report. $1,500 was like a good low number, not the real bread he was burning.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, you can't get caught.
It was the law abiding citizens in the state of Florida that ratted him out.
There was that Kraft's holistic healing component that where the vets were placed, right? Where Kraft goes in for
exactly.
holistic healing.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Password grab ass.
Come on.
And guess what's happening? Sports Journal, which is a great marketing enterprise, guess who they're honoring this year as executive of the year? Robert Kraft.
Oh my God!
Yeah. Man. Robert Kraft.
Is that coming, Carl?
Absolutely, Robert Kraft.
Absolutely. You know what? Hey, Patrick. Too bad, too bad. Marilyn Monroe's not alive to sing him happy birthday. I guess.
Yes,
I can see him whistling this kid and that.
That's amazing. Skipping and pandering. Yeah, he's in the right business for the NFL.
Hey. Is his pacemaker up to date?
I think so.
Gentlemen, I've enjoyed this very much as I have for the past 10 years. I'm thankful for everybody and the input that they brought to the table because they did it of their own. You know, much as I would love to pay y'all, I ain't give y'all a dime and y'all gave me dollars of information back. You know,
I'll send a check, though.
I appreciate
it. Hey Mike, stop fronting, man. I did get that box of free White Castles for us, so we cool. The frozen
did speak up.
Mike, I said it from day one. The day now, you can pay me in potato chips, and I won't say a word.
That's all right.
What's your brand, T-Mac? What's your brand, man? I got you.
Charles Schiff, non-salted. That's also kill you.
In the 10 years we've been in Spoke Up for the old school players, he interviewed at least 9 of them, and many of them, including Mr. Burrows, provided some valuable insight that made the NFL pause. And then we had something to do with that. As it was through Eric and others, we were able to get the heart of this drama at Penn State and the fact that Paterno bitched up and his son bitched up and Stephen A. bitched up. So that triumvirate proved that there was something fucking going on. Gary found out something similar happening at Syracuse University. His work with changing the nickname of that team in Washington. All that we had a hand in. We spoke on the fact that the NFL was trying to buy its way through the armed services for these anthems and these ceremonies, which we spoke on. So we put some work in, and we intend to put in some more. But I couldn't have done this without you guys and the ladies. And I want to say thank you very much to everybody. So as I close out here, I'm going to start off. Thank you, Reggie. Please throw something in the pot.
Well, first of all, I think about, unfortunately, the first black referee, Johnny Greer, who's now ancestor. He made his transit out to the Advanced Tester, and I just wonder what that brother went through. And you used to see that black brother stand there and be in charge. I love every minute of it. And again, Mike, I think about the Queen Cheryl, who made her transition not too long ago. Before I throw that in, I'm just going to say again, as I spoke earlier, Russia does not tolerate gays. They have a hatred for it. That's right. Why I made the comment that Brittany Grimes considers herself as a man. And if you look at wedding pictures, she has the big white tuxedo on. I'm not being flippant when I say this, but the bottom line is that when you have other countries out there that have a different perspective and not as liberal as America, you're putting yourself in a bad situation. Let's be honest.
You're right.
They don't mind
right
now in a war situation using her as a pawn. And again, maybe I'm by myself, but she's so stupid to go in there with drugs. You think they're going to lift a finger to try to get her black ass out of there? Hey, guess what? It ain't going to happen.
There is no dialogue with the United States and Russia. Zilch.
Yeah. And as far as the MEAC right now, the sad thing about it, they are now the CAA, who a certain doctor down in Hampton, Harvey, traveled over 20 years ago to get into the CAA, and they didn't want them niggas in there because why? They thought that the school would cheat and they would have guys not eligible to play ball, eligible to play. Oh, wow. Talk about the Europeans trying to steal again. But here's the comical part. Now the CAA comes to the HBCUs to save them so they can have an automatic bid for football, and they got their eyes on Norfolk State. Norfolk State. And we know what Norfolk State doing in basketball, so don't not be surprised if they try to make an offer to them because the A&T is already coming. Hampton's there, and they love to see Norfolk State and some school named Delaware State, too. Just food for thought.
I take from my brother, Reggie. Thank you for everything you've done. I look forward to working with you next week. I want to also say thank you to Mr. Farrakh, my Italian brother. Please throw something in the pot, Patrick.
And Reg, I'm talking about Mr. Gray. I had the opportunity to speak to him one or two times in the press box. Very, very informative brother.
God bless you.
Yeah. Yes. See, he's,
that's
he
history right there. God bless you.
He wasn't playing, bro. Very quickly, baseball strike is the owners and the billionaires, the millionaires and the billionaires haven't completed their negotiations yet. But all I say is this, there's the day in which they want to pinpoint as the next critical time. They've already missed 184 games. But they want to come back as guess what day? Jackie Robinson Day.
Uh-huh.
Of all times. Come on, yo. Jackie Robinson Day. And that's what
they won't let that man. They won't let that man rest, will they? They will not let that man rest.
Him buy his jersey and pimp him out. He can't even rest in peace. I feel you.
By the major leagues of 90% American-born Caucasians, right? Saw Jackie Robinson Day. Another slight under the guise of fairness.
Eric,
preach.
Thank you for everything you've offered up.
I think it's a recent thought. I never have anything prepped for this, but because referees were brought up, HBCUs, Hugh Hollins, right, was a longtime NBA official.
That's right.
Dynamite referee, kind of like what Reggie talked about, what Reggie sparked the thought when he mentioned about seeing that brother in charge. Hugh always looked in charge when he was a referee in the NBA during that time frame, right? You know, and there was never no scandal associated with Hugh Hollins' name. He was a long-time, solid, consistent, dynamite NBA official. He's up for a Hall of Fame nomination. And he also went to an HBCU, you know, and that's his background, too. So there's another brother that had a real great, strong disposition, went to a historically black college. There's 11 NBA referees right now who graduated from HBCU colleges as well. So they make the standard. But all these brothers are building off Hugh Hollins. He set the representation. He was dynamite. His name doesn't come up often. He wasn't grandstanding like Earl Strom and Richie Powers and Jake O'Donnell and Mike Mathis and the rest of these bozos who were trying to run some airplane ticket fraud under the great stern of with who protected all these strikes. What? How did Tim Donaghy do you? Do you NBA front office? Hugh Hollins never got caught up in any of that. Hugh Hollins never introduced a woman to the best player in the league at the time, like Michael Jordan's did. You know, referees, and you know, Mike's still paying for that paternity suit and that lawsuit, you know, by virtue of an NBA referee hooking him up. So Hugh was never
give me flashbacks.
Hugh was never involved in any of that malfeasance. To Patrick's point about and Professor's point and all the brothers' point, really, actually, you know, shouting at our own, remembering our own, acknowledging our own, those who did great work. Hugh Hollins will definitely be a Hall of Fame member. He did it the right way. He went to an HBCU. He was a dynamite lead official for many years, highly respected, and like putting his name out there because his Google hits will go up after our call tonight. So, yeah, Hugh Hollins, people, check him out.
You know that's right. You know that's right. And thank you so much, Eric.
And Mike, throw in M and S for two for baseball.
No question about that.
Absolutely.
Professor, thank you. You know, I did buy the book, so you didn't have to pray on it. You've been around this long. You must be doing something right. Thank you for everything you put into the pot. Give us a little something now.
First of all, I want to ask Eric, was that Hugh Hollins or Hugh Evans?
Hugh Evans, right? I'm picturing there was two Hughes. Hugh Evans, you are correct. It is Hugh Evans.
Yeah,
you're correct.
Hugh Evans.
Thank you for that. Thank you for that edit. It was Hugh Evans. Yes.
So Hugh Evans went to. Hugh Evans went to A&T. He played in the backcourt with
Hugh Evans. Correct, not Hugh Hollins. Who's the other brother? Hugh Evans.
Okay.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Thank you for the edit.
Yeah, they played together, I think, 2 years. I think Al was 2 years ahead of Hugh Hollins, Hugh Evans. They had a thing going with Cleo Hill. They used to cuss Hill a lot because he could just run circles around him. And that's just another part of kind of stories we got to tell, because
Hugh Evans. Yes, sir.
The more I get into this, you know, I'm going through now editing pictures and whatnot, and you know I see a lot of guys I watch play going back to the 70s, and then you know you see all the old heads who came before them, and this is in men's basketball, but it was the same thing when you know, people talk about different things relative to the women's game. Well, my junior year is really when the women's basketball truly took off. And it took off at HBCUs more so than it did at white schools, because white schools were in court trying to stop women's basketball and anything else. There was this group of young ladies over on that time, it was called Jefferson Street, and they were proving that women could do hard work and stuff. As coaches to say, hey, they used to have babies and turn around and go back to work in the field so they can go out and run. But I digress. You know, I don't know who all is going to the women's tournament from HBCU, but I do know that thank God the young ladies from Lincoln University made it. They lost one of their own to COVID during the pandemic, and they played for her, and they won their first ever CIAA championship for women in general, but specific for basketball.
Mm-hmm.
So, and Denver State finally won the CIAA in men's after 43 years. Because every time they say something to me about it, I say, yeah, I remember the last time they won. I was a sophomore in college, and that was over 40 years ago. But anyway, you know, let's keep it moving.
Professor, thank you. www.redheadedtribute.com. Books, T-shirts, bric-a-brac. Any day is a good day. Think about some black history.
Big G, what can we say? You made Washington change that nickname. You did some serious work.
Commander Gray.
You were unrelenting in being Pepe Le Pew.
We'll change it.
You're my brother. I love you. And you put in some serious work. Put something in the pot.
Okay. We're getting ready to go into the second week of the Paralympics in Beijing. Nobody is watching the Paralympics of the very beginning of 2022. NBC, Peacock, they got to do a better job of advertising. The Paralympic Games are very important to me as an individual, for me being a disabled person. Disabled sports gives you the opportunity to express yourself. I missed the Olympics by 3 points in bowling in 1988.
Damn Russian judge.
You got to watch those Eastern Bloc judges.
Exactly.
These are very important to every athlete around the world. So if you have time, if you have space, watch the Paragames. It's only one hour a night on NBC. MSNBC, 1 hour a night, that's it. Shame on NBC for doing that too. But we gotta do a better job.
No doubt.
Is the Winter Olympics over? I mean, it's over, right?
Yeah. You kids on the block. Yeah, yeah.
Boys band. I mean, this is not the Osmonds against the Jackson 5.
No.
It's better. It's better. It's Menudo versus NSYNC. That's what it is.
Yeah. Oh, my God. New edition.
Oh, the humanity.
Versus LeVert.
How about that?
I think LeVert, though.
No shit, I think LeVert.
Casanova.
Me and Romeo ain't never been friends.
For real. Boys can blow. Tony, what can I say, bro? 10 years. My man, I love you. Thank you for joining me on this trip. We do what we can to do what we can. Put something in the pot, please.
Happy birthday to you.
Hell yeah.
I got something better than that. A 25-year-old woman is suing Dallas Cowboy owner Jerry Jones, alleging that the billionaire paid her mother hundreds of thousands of dollars in 1996, the last time he won the Super Bowl, to conceal that he was the girl's biological father. A senior lawsuit says he is carrying her life.
Another facelift.
Boy,
huh?
With a capital M.
At age one, the girl was bound to secrecy by a confidentiality agreement signed by her mother, according to the lawsuit. Now, Jones, of course, denied in settlement documents that he was the biological father of the child, but he allegedly paid her $375,000 in exchange for confidentiality and had an Arkansas friend and lawyer named Donald Jack, who, of course, that's Billy. Of course, we all know that's Billy Jack's brother. So he set up trust for the mother and the girl linked to her mother, keeping Jones' paternity secret, according to a lawsuit.
I'd say,
boy,
I think
he's old gangster. No one has been that wild turkey all the time.
Well, I guess Jerry will say that this person chaps his hide other than Bill Parcells.
Yep.
The question is, what is Mr. Jones saying about
Mike,
this? That's the question.
Mike, the moral of this is Jerry apparently likes cowboys and cowgirls, which is kind of nice.
Nope. That's what you
follow
get.
Follow the tumbleweeds.
Boy.
Well, you know what?
My boy,
in a long game, John.
He has done this well. In spite of impediments thrown in front of us. You know, I can't tell you how many times they were giving me explanations about what was I listening to and strange sounds that were coming over the place. 10 years of this bullshit. Now, we went on because you know how powerful it is and how important it is to have a voice. And as Fred says, tell our own story. So instead of getting into a long dialogue about it, I end this simply by saying that.
I'm sorry about the Anthony Daniels.
Thanks.
Thanks, sir. Oh, thank you, thank you.
Oh.
Thank you.
My ass.
Good night.